All right, Rabosai, good morning. Let's begin. So we're picking up today's daf is Kuf Lam Gimel. We have a beautiful daf ahead of us. So the Gemara says the following. We're starting the second line down. Last word on the line, 133a. Hahu depalgino l'nechasi l'isisei u'libnei. So there was a particular man who divided up his estate between his wife and his son. Shir Chadikla. He went ahead and he left behind, or he left out of the division, one palm tree. Take a look at the Rashbam for just a moment. Hahud de Palaginu, it's almost right across in the Rashbam. Hahud de Palaginu, kol mechasav chilek lebanavu leishno. He went ahead and he divided up his entire estate between his sons and between his wife. Ubitzavas shchiv meira, dahainu asa'a shutof ben habanim. So again, the Rashbam just goes out of his way to say, this was a Shchiv Meirah division. So the husband himself is on his deathbed, and as part of his dying wish, he divides up his estate. Now the difference in this case over here is, he divided up the majority of the estate, but left behind a dekel, left behind again one particular palm tree that he did not go ahead and give to the wife, nor did he give it to the children. So it says the Gemara, Savar Ravina Lemimar, so Ravina thought to say, Lesla Ella Chad Digla. So Ravina wanted to say that she only has a claim against that one palm tree. Now take a look at the Rashbam for just a moment. Savar Ravina Lemimar Lesla Mimoser Ksuvasa Ella Hahu Dikla. That ultimately, again, what she has as a claim from her ksuva is only that palm tree. Daha ilashayir dikla of the ksuva samin habanim, shemachla lahem shibuda, mishum denasis shotav beinehen, vahashtanami zachu abanim vihititrov es hadekel. So remember again, Ravina wanted to say the following. Imagine for just a moment had the entire estate been divided up. So had the entire estate been divided up, so remember again, she would not have a claim against the sons for anything regarding her ksuba. Because remember, as we discussed yesterday, and the truth is already the day before, is that when the estate is divided up, so Lamaisa, again, she agrees to relinquish her ksuba claim against the rest of the estate. And the lien that she has only devolves upon the property that she's given. So Ravina wanted to suggest in the following situation, Ravina wanted to suggest that in this case here, where there is a palm tree that is unaccounted for, there is a palm tree ultimately again that has not been allocated to either one, her ksuva lien devolves upon that one palm tree. So the Gemara says, Amali Rav Yemer LeRavina. Rav Yemer said to Ravina, one second. I lesla chad dikla, nami lesla. So ultimately, again, if you say she has no claim against the rest of the estate, then she should have no claim against that one date palm as well. Ella, rather, you have to say, migo dinochsa ledikla, nachsa nami lekulu nichsi. Once at the end of the day, there is some property that her ksuva claim could devolve upon, then by definition, Rav Yemer says to Ravina that Lamaisa the ksuva lien should devolve upon the rest of the properties as well. But say, take a look at the Rashbam. It's almost right across. Amar li Rav Yemer the Ravina. We're not going to do this whole thing. Let me just show you part of this. So Rav Yemer said to Ravina. So we'll say Rav Yemer's logic to Ravina is essentially the following: that Lamaisa, once you say that there are additional properties upon which her ksuva claim could devolve upon, then Lamaisa, what? There are other properties. There are other properties, ultimately, again, that the ksuva claim could devolve upon as well. So look at the Rashbam for just a moment. Amri Rav Yemer l'Ravina I lesla, ksuva mechila kabanim, mishum diyada de lesla nechasa machrinim, umach lala bishol sha'asa shutaf beinehem. So again, if you want to say that in a normal case where the husband divides up, when I say normal case, in the case that we've been discussing, the husband divides up all of the entire estate, and therefore, again, there's property that she owns, there's property ultimately again that the sons own, and there's no additional properties. Ihachi dikla nami lesla dahayadis le lahai dekel umachla luhul yarshav the chok suvasa machla mahani nechasim the islim mishum dasa shutav. So ultimately, again, in a case where he divides up, the husband divides up the entire estate, and the sons own some of it, and the wife owns some of it. So that's a case where ultimately, again, she is mochalas. She ultimately lifts her lien against the rest of the estate, again, in return for the fact that she is a partner in the estate. So the Gemara says, Demali limchol shibuda me osan shechelak lebanim, umali osadak el shlochilak. Elamai islan lamimar meizatam nachsa adekel litrof mimenu. Hainu mishum de la machla ksuvasa sharehiniach la makam tsas ligvos himenu. So this is actually very interesting. Shravimber says Shravina, but in this case where the husband is leaving behind the palm tree. So what happens to that palm tree? That palm tree represents the ability for her ksuvalin to devolve upon something in addition to the property that was given to her as a partner. Kigo hai dekel umigo nami. So we'll say this is amazing. So let's look. So what Rav Yemar is saying is the following: when the husband leaves behind a piece of property that was not allocated to the sons, nor was it allocated to the wife, what's the status of that property? That property now is encumbered by the ksuva. So Rav Yemar wants to say the following: once there's a piece of property upon which the ksuva lin could devolve upon, then by definition the ksuva lin devolves upon the rest of the property as well. Dehai deshaskav lo irara, because that which she was quiet and she did not object, hainu lefi shaya maniach lo hadekel v'savra lamer ar achshav ad shishun b'zim b'zim. So we don't have to go through Resh Lashbam, but the point of what we'll say is happening over here is the following. Seeing that we're now dealing with a third category of cases. Category one is where there's no property disbursement to a wife. So if there's no property disbursement to a wife, then what are her rights in the estate? What are her rights? She's encumbered, meaning she encumbers everything. She has a lien against all estate property for the payment of her ksuva. If he goes ahead and divides up the estate between his wife and his children, and he gives her property, then what's the halacha, Rabbi Osai? Then ultimately all she has is the piece of property that he has given her, and she in effect lifts her lien against the rest of the property, rest of the estate. Category number three, Rabbi Osai, is the following situation, where lemaisa, the husband gives the wife property, the husband gives the children property, but there is still some property that remains, quote-unquote, in the estate. What happens in that case? Rav Yemar suggesting to Bosai that because that property, in this case it's the palm tree, is unaccounted for, the ksuvalin goes back onto that property. But once the ksuvalin goes back onto that dekel, then it goes back on what? It goes back on the rest of the estate property as well. I'm sorry, because at the end of the day, the only time that she lifts her lien is when all property is dispersed. But the moment that there is still property in the pot for the estate, and there's ksuva lien on that, there's no such thing. Either it's an all or nothing, it's an all or nothing situation. Either she lifts her lien, or she has the lien. Once there's property left in the estate, kitty, so to speak, then lemaisa, again, it devolves upon everything. And the Gemara says, so why doesn't she object? Right, so why doesn't she say something? The Rashbam goes on to say, because she feels there's no point in objecting now before there is an actual distribution of the estate. But lamaisa, again, once there's property that's unaccounted for, the lien devolves upon that. Once the lien devolves upon that, it devolves upon everything else in the estate as well. Amravuna, Shimna, so we'll say next year. So therefore, we've established essentially three different categories of cases, legabe estate distribution. Or I should say, legabe her ksuva lien on the estate. Amravuna, shchivmira shakasav kol nechasav la'acher. Both say, listen to this case. Shravuna says, if a shchivmira, person on his deathbed, I will say, you understand, by the way, why we're framing these cases as shchivmira. Shchivmira, I apologize if in the back, if you can't hear me, I'm sorry. I can't speak any louder than this. So it's your problem. So the Gemara says the following. Shchivmira, we're talking about all these cases of shchivmira, because I will say, in this case over here, what's happening is the following. The halacha of a shchivmira is divrei shchivmira, damu. The Chazal gave the Shchiv Meira a very unique type of ability, which is through a verbal conveyance to treat it as if, everything is actually committed to writing. This was done for the purpose, ultimately, again, of giving the Shchiv Meira a certain amount of Yishav Hadas, a certain amount, ultimately, again, of just inner quietude, of knowing that what he wants to give over is done. So Rav Huna said the following: Shchiv Mira Shakasav Kol Nechasav LaAcher. So if Shchiv Mira goes ahead and writes his entire estate to another, so what do we do? So what do we look at? Rowan Imroy LiYarsho Notlon Mishum Yerusha. If the person, I will say, who is the beneficiary of the bequest, is someone who is fit to inherit the Shchiv Mira, then we give it to that person as a form of Yerushna. We're going to define what this means in just a moment. V'imlav, let's say the Shchiv Mira assigns his estate to someone who is not in line to inherit him. Then what? V'imlav, notlan mishum matana. Then ultimately we give the person the gift as a matana. So we'll say, so bottom line is, the Shchiv Mira is assigning his property to, we'll call him Reuven. So one way or another, Reuven is getting that property. Well, with the Gemara says, what do we look at? Is Reuven an inheritor to the Shchiv Mira, in which case he'll receive it as Yerusha? Or is Reuven not related to the Shchiv Mira at all, in which case he will receive it ultimately as a matana? Now, we'll discuss the Nafka Mina between getting this property as a matana versus getting this property as a Yerusha. So says the Gemara, Amar li Rav Nachman. So Rav Nachman says, this is Rav Nachman says to Rav Huna, Ganva ganuve lamalach. Why are you giving over your teachings in such an underhanded way? Isviru locha krab yochanan memberoka, ema locha krab yochanan memberoka. In other words, if you say the halacha was Rabbi Yochanan memberoka, then just say the halacha was Rabbi Yochanan memberoka. Remember again, what did Rabbi Yochanan memberoka say? Rabbi Yochanan memberoka said that a Shchiv Mira could choose to go ahead and give his entire estate to one of his children, even though by doing so, he will go ahead and what? He will go ahead and deprive other children from going ahead and getting their proper Yerusha. So over here you say Rav Nachman says to Rav Huna, I don't understand. If you're just saying Halacha follows Rabbi Yochanan ben Baruch, then just say it. Don't employ this entire underhanded way. So the Gemara says, "Dahash shamasicha, Rabbi Yochanan ben Baruch da'azla," because I've heard you go on record that the halacha in fact follows Rabbi Yochanan ben Baruch. To which the Gemara says, "Dilma ki ha ka'amrit." Maybe you were trying to say the following. So we'll say, this was Rav Nachman saying to Rav Huna. Rav Huna, maybe this is what you meant to say. Dahu dahava kashachiv. So we'll say there was a particular man who was dying. Va'amrulei nechasei leman. And they said to him, who do you want your property to go to? Dilma leplanya. And then again, we'll say, so what they said is they're asking the question and they also fed him a suggestion. So, who do you, Shchiv Mira, you're dying. Who do you want your property to go to? Perhaps you want your property ultimately to go leplanya, to so and so. Va'amr luhu elulaman. And the Shchiv Mira essentially said, well, to who else should it go to? So it's a very cryptic conversation. So saying to the Shchiv Mira, you're about to die, do you want your property to go to so-and-so? We'll call him Reuven. And essentially the Shchiv Mira says, well, who else should it go to but Reuven? So the Gemara says, Va'amrit lan ala. And we said about this case, Imro liyarsho, not lan mishum yerusha. So if Reuven stands in line to inherit the Shchiv Mira, then Reuven will get the property as Yerusha. V'imlav. But if Reuven is not a Yoresh, notlon mishum matana, then Abba say what? Then he gets it as a matana. So the Gemara says, so you have Rav Nachman saying to Rav Huna, is this the case you were referring to? Amar le in hachi kamina. To which Rav Huna said, yes, this was the case I was referring to. So Abba say, so essentially now what we have over here is the following. That if the Shchiv Mira assigns his estate to a particular individual, we will assign the property to that individual. The only shaila is that person getting it betoras Yerusha, or is that person getting it betoras Matana? To which the Gemara says, Lamai Hilchasa. Well, what's the nafkamina? Meaning, who cares? At the end of the day, he's getting the property. So what does it matter if he gets it as a Yerusha? What does it matter if he gets it as a Matana? Oh, I'll tell you how the Gemara says. Savarav adabar ava kameh diravala meymar imroi liyarsho amanaso nizonis minichasav v'imlav ein amanuso nizonis minichasav. The Hebrew Bible says the nafkamina is the following. If the property is conveyed as a Yerusha, then what? Then the widow is entitled ultimately again to support from Yerushalayim. So I remember again, if a man, what the Gemara is suggesting over here is the following, that Lamaisa, if a man dies and his property is inherited by an heir, so the heir has the obligation to support the almana, has the obligation to support the widow. So if the property is conveyed b'toras Yerusha, then the obligation to support the widow is upon the Yoresh, the Imlav, but ultimately, again, if it's conveyed as a matana, as a gift, not as Yerush, in other words, it's conveyed to someone who's not a Yoresh, but rather someone who's just the recipient of a gift, and then what? Ein amenuso nizonus minachasav. Then at the end of the day, the amana will not be sustained, will not go ahead and get, will not be supported from the estate, to which the Gemara says, Amrali Rava, Migra Gara, Hashta Birusha Doraisa Amrit Amanuso Nizonis Minachosov, the Matana Drabana Lakoshakin. So Rava sees that to be an untenable situation. Are you going to tell me now that because the Shchiv Meira conveys the property as a Matana and not as a Yerusha, that the Amana loses out on her support? In other words, Rava says, literally translated, Rava says, Migra Gara, should the Amana lose out, Hashta Birusha Doraisa Amrit Amanasam Nizonus Minachasav. They both say Yerusha, which works based on a biblical framework. We've established that an Amana, in fact, is supported. Matana, which is only Dirabanan. You're going to tell me that an Amana loses out? Of course, an Amana should be entitled to a support. They both say, now, what does that mean, a Matana is Dirabanan? Take a look at the Rashivan for just a moment. It's about ten lines up from the bottom. Matana Dirabanan, Kihach Makna Shchivmira. She'in ba kinyan ella midirabanan ki depreshes lakol shekin denizonus man. So Rabbi said, the Gemara says over here, when we say matana, what type of matana are we referring to? This is a matna shchivmira. This is the ability of a shchivmira to go ahead and convey property to someone. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. If when the property is transferred through the biblical mechanism of Yerusha, and amana, the widow, gets her support, if the property is going to be transferred through a rabbinic mechanism, of what? Of matna shchiv meira, all the more so the amana should get her support. In other words, what's the havamina to say that just because it's transferred as a matana, that the amana should lose out as a result, ultimately again, of her support? And Abbas said, I want to point out something interesting here. You know, obviously, if a person, when they're healthy, let's call him Yaakov, right? If Yaakov, when he's healthy, decides to go ahead and gift away his entire estate, then he dies, is his wife entitled, is the widow entitled to support? No, because there's nothing left in the estate. We'll say, with the Gemara, so again, you could have a situation where an Amana is left with nothing. A person chooses to gift away his entire estate before he dies, as a Bari. What the Gemara is suggesting over here is when this happens as a Shchiv Meira, when a man is on his deathbed and he's conveying property. So the Gemara says over here, to tell me that when he gives it through Matna Shchiv Meira, which is a rabbinic mechanism, the Amana should lose out on her entitlement for Mazonos, that doesn't make sense. Meaning, if she's going to get that through Yerusha, which is a biblical framework, all the more so she should still get support when the property is being conveyed through a rabbinic framework of Matna Shchiv Meira. So we'll say, so therefore, wherein lies the nafkamina? So again, we're going to take that off the table. In other words, where the Gemara is holding right now is whether the Shchiv Meira transfers the property b'toras Yerusha, or whether he transfers the property b'toras Matana. What's going to happen als the Amana? She is going to be entitled to support. So if that's the case, we're still trying to figure out what's the nafkamina between conveying the property as Yerusha or as Matana.
So, cases where the grantee, the beneficiary, is the Yoresh. There were recipients of the Matana, is the one who would have been a Yoresh had there not been a Matana.
Say that again.
If it's a matana, the cases where the recipient of the matana is the person who lives in the yoresh.
No.
Had there not been a matana?
No. The case of matna shchima that we're describing over here is someone who would not be a yoresh. Someone who, if the man were to die, this person would not be in line. The chiddush that the Gemara is saying over here is that even if that person, who is not the Yoresh, were to receive a matna shchiv meira, there would still be an obligation for him to provide for the amana from that matana. So says the Gemara, El Amrav. So we'll say, we're still trying to look now for the nafkamina, ultimately, again, between conveying it as a gift or as Yerusha. Ella Amar Rav, listen to this. Kedeshalach Rav Acha Bar Avya, L'divei Rabbi Yochanan Ben Baroka. Moshe, listen to this. In accordance with the words of Yochanan Ben Baroka, who says that you could go ahead and convey property to one of the children, even though you are going ahead and cutting the rest of them out, listen to this. Nechasi Lecha, V'acharecha L'ploni. Moshe, let's say the father makes the following, or we'll call him the owner of the estate, makes the following stipulation. I hereby convey my property to you, Nechasi Lecha, V'acharecha L'ploni. But after you, I want the property to go to so-and-so. So what I said, the case over here would be, so Yaakov says, I want my property to go to A, but then A, when you die, I don't want the property to go to who? To your heirs. Instead, I want the property to go to B. So watch this. Im hayarishon ra'ili yarsho, ein l'sheni b'makom rishon klum. We'll say, watch this. This is incredible. So if Yaakov goes ahead and says this, now let's say Yaakov happens to leave this property to his son, to Reuven. And Yaakov says to Reuven, I hereby leave my property to you, but Reuven, when you die, you my son, when you die, I don't want the property going to your heirs. Instead, I want the property going to Avram. Who's Avram? Avram is someone totally unrelated to the Mishpacha. But this was the stipulation that Yaakov made. Yaakov, right, when I die, Yaakov says, I want the property to go to Reuven, my son. But after Reuven dies, I don't want it to go to Reuven's kids. I want it to go to Avram. So what happens, we'll say? So what's the halacha? Ein l'sheni v'makom rishon klum. So we'll say, in that case, Avram is not entitled to anything. Avram gets nothing. Why does Avram get nothing? She'ein, that the Mesorah Sashas changes this. Yaakov Sabach, excuse me. She'ein ze lashon matana, ela lashon yerusha, v'yerusha ein lehefsek. Because Rabosai, since the conveyance is being made to someone who is an inheritor, we don't look at this as a matana, rather what do we look at it as? A yerusha. And I will say, a Yerusha in la hefsek, which means that Yerusha has no stop. Once you convey something ultimately to someone as Yerusha, then what? That property is theirs, and that property ultimately again transfers down the line. So here, the incredible Chiddush over here is that even though when Yaakov conveys this property to Reuven, his son, he's conveying it to how? Seth, what was the name of this kind of gift?
A life estate,
right? So he's saying, Reuven, right? He's saying, Reuven, I'm giving you this property as a life estate, which means it's yours as long as you live. But after you die, I want it to go to Avram. We'll say, essentially what we do is we ignore that second part of his statement. Once he's giving it over to Reuven, who is a son, meaning once Yaakov is giving it over to someone who really stands in line to get this property, b'toras Yerusha, once Reuven gets it as a Yerusha, then by definition, anything that would remove it from that status of Yerusha, that statement, is null and void. We ignore the second part of Yaakov's statement of conveying it over to Reuven, of conveying it over to Avram, and once it becomes Reuven, it is Reuven's, and therefore once Reuven dies, what will happen to that property? It passes to Reuven's Yarshim. So the Gemara says, Amrali Rav L'Rav Nachman, V'ha'afsika, what are you talking about? Or is, how can you tell me Yerusha in Lehefsik? This was not the T'nai of Yaakov. Yaakov, when he conveyed this property to Reuven, made it a life estate. He was explicit. He said, Reuven, it's yours as long as you're alive. But once you die, what happens? That property ultimately goes to Avram. To which the Gemara says, about say, last line, Kuflamid Gimel Amad Aleph, who sever Yesh Lehefsik. You're right. So what happens? Yaakov thought that he could stop the inheritance. V'rachmana amar ein lahefsik. So we'll say ultimately again we have a clash, right? We have a clash between what Yaakov said and what the Torah said. And we'll say what happens whenever you go up against the Torah? You're going to lose. So take a look at the Rashbam. We'll say take a look at the Rashbam. Last, before you turn the page. V'ha afsika. The Altanai Sheyitol Sheni Acher of Horus L'Rishon. Remember again, both say the way that Yaakov, the patriarch, conveyed this over to Reuven, his son, is that, Reuven, I'm giving you a life estate. It's yours for as long as you live. But when you die, I want it to go to Avram, my best friend from Yeshiva, who's unrelated to us. So what happens? Rashbam says, Rachmana Amar La'ein Hefsek. But also the Torah says, that's not how Yerusha works. That once Reuven, the son, inherits his father, it's his the Olam Void. V'havei Masna Amasha Kasov Batorah. Therefore, Rabbi say we view ultimately Yaakov's stipulation as a stipulation that runs contrary to Torah law. Vavi Maisa Maisa Vatnai Batal Vahachi Hochasaki the Shachar of Achada Chazino Uvda B'Salach Kavase. Rabbi say at the end of the day, we view. So Rabbi say this is what the Gemara means when it says that Lamaisa, when the Shchiv Meira, when the Shchiv Meira conveys over the property, if he conveys it over ultimately as Yerusha, then it remains as Yerusha, even if what? Even if he made a Tanai that it should convert into a Matana. Or as Rabbi says, essentially what the Torah says is, once something is granted as Yerusha, then what? It's a Yerusha. And even if the grantor, right, in this case Yaakov, made a stipulation that says, Reuven, you only have a life estate, and when you die, I want it to convert into a Matana, that's Masna Mashakosav Batorah. Rabbi says, that's making a Tanai that runs contrary to Torah law, because the Torah says, once it's a Yerusha, it can convert it into a Matana. Therefore, Rabbi says, we view the conveyance to Reuven as a proper conveyance of Yerusha, and the Tanai that ultimately would transfer it to Avram is null and void, and therefore ultimately again the property remains the property of Reuven the son. And therefore we'll say that's what the Gemara means when it says that when the Shechiv Meira conveys property, we look, is it a Yerusha or is it a Matana? Which now we're so what's the nafkamina between if it's a Yerusha Matana? That once it's a Yerusha, it remains what? A Yerusha, and can't convert to a Matana. Mashe'i Kim Rabbo say, if the Shechiv Meira is transferring property to someone who is not a Yoresh. So let's say again, Rabbo say, let's play this case out. Yaakov's dying, he chooses to go ahead and transfer his property to Avram. Avram is not a Yoresh. And he gives it to Avram as a life estate. He says, Avram, when you die, it goes to Yitzchak, who's unrelated to you. What's the halacha? That works. That works. Why? Because when it's given as Torah's Matana, you could stipulate again the succession of who it goes to. But once it's given over to Torah's Yerusha, you cannot stipulate that it should convert into a Matana. So I say, Amud Beis, this is an amazing episode. Ha'u. Ha'u Dam Leila Chavre. There was a man who said to his friend, Nechasi lach v'acharech leploni. So it was a man who said to his friend, I'm about to die. So first of all, the Rashram just says over here, this friend was not just a friend, but it was Haroi L'Yarsho. He was also in line to inherit. So he was an inheritor. So Reuven says, Yaakov says to his friend Reuven, who also happened to be a Yoresh, Nechasi lach, I'm giving my property to you, va'acharecha leploni. But after you die, I want you to give it to Avram, my friend. And I was about saying, Avram is not a Yoresh. I don't want you to give it to my friend. So again, Yaakov is giving the property to Reuven as a life estate. And when you die, I want you to give it to Avram. So what happens? The Rishon Roy Liyarshon, as we just said before, the first guy in line, i.e. Reuven, is in line to inherit Yaakov. So what happens? Rishon Roy Liyarshava. Shachiv Rishon. So fast forward, Yaakov dies, Reuven gets the estate. Then what happens? Reuven dies. So who shows up in Bezin after the Levaya? Right? So Avram, who again, Avram knew the fact that he was assigned this estate by Yaakov after the death of Reuven. So Avram shows up in Bezin to get the estate. So Shachar Bishon, Asa Sheni Katava, Avram shows up ultimately in Bezin to get the estate. Sava Rav Ilish Kamedarava Lemay Mar Sheni Nami Shakyo. Sabo say Rav Ilish wanted to paskin that now Rav Ilish, so this case came before Rav Ilish, as Rav Ilish was also before Rava, and Rav Ilish wanted to paskin that what? That Avram, the second guy, in fact gets the estate. This was in line with the wishes of Yaakov, who passed away. Yaakov wanted it to be a life estate for Reuven, and after Reuven died, it would go to Avram. So Rav Ilish wanted to paskin in line with the wishes of the deceased. Amar Lei, so we'll say, so Ravi here is what Rav Elisha is about to do. And he tells him, Amar Lei, Dayoni dechatzatzta hocha daimi. Only Dayorim dechatzatzta would paskin like this. What does it mean, Dayorim dechatzatzta? Look at the Rashbam. Dayorim dechatzatzta, Dayone pshara. So we'll say, only judges who always look for compromise would paskin like this. Now we'll say, now you say to yourself, a compromise is a good thing. So we'll say, not necessarily. Sometimes the reason a dayon will go for pshara is why we'll go for a compromise is she'ein bikiyin bedin. Because if the dayon knows that he doesn't know the halacha, sometimes he'll go ahead and he'll look for a compromise. V'chotzitzin mechza lezeh u'mechza lezeh. Kedin mamon hamotel b'safek. So I will say, so Rava gives Rav Ilish some musr. He says, Rav Ilish, you're wrong. You're wrong. Only a dayan who doesn't know the halacha and therefore is looking for a pshara would paskin like this. Now the Rabbeinu Chananel is a bit starker than Rashbam. Says Rabbeinu Chananel perush chatzatzta beisakvaras. Only dayanim who dig graves would go ahead and pass on. So I will say that this is actually a little bit starker. Only dayanim who are looking to bury the halacha, who are looking to bury the halacha, ultimately again would go ahead. So this is essentially an essay of saying, Rav Ilish, I think you may be mistaken. Right? So I think you may be mistaken. So I'll say, so listen to this. Now, meaning what? The Gemara says something amazing. So the Amalei Dayanim dechatzatzta hocha daimi, lav hainu tishalach Rav Acha bar Avya. Is this not the very halacha that Rav Acha bar Avya said to us before in Amud Aleph, namely, again, what Rabbi say, that halacha l'maisa, once property has been conveyed ultimately as a Yerusha, it cannot convert afterwards to a matana. Once it's been given as a Yerusha, once Yerusha, always a Yerusha, what about the fact that this was the stipulation of the Shemira? We don't pay attention to that stipulation. Why? Because that stipulation runs contrary to Torah law. Torah law says that once it's a Yerusha, it remains as a Yerusha. It does not convert a gift to an unrelated third party. And therefore, again, we ignore the second part of the stipulation. So here you have Rava giving incredible Musa to Rav Ilish. Bless you. Ichsif. Rav Ilish was embarrassed. Now, why was Rav Ilish embarrassed? So obviously he was embarrassed because he was wrong about the halacha, but he was embarrassed for a different reason. Take a look at the Rashbam. Ichsif, Rav Ilish, Mei Rava. So Rav Ilish was embarrassed in front of Rava. Pen Yoma Rava Belibo, Ilu Lo Hayisikan, Hayadon Din Sheker. So we'll say, Rav Ilish was embarrassed because now he realized, that Rava realized, had Rava not been present, Rav Ilish would have passed in the wrong way. What Rav Ilish supposed to say, the fact that a dayan can make a mistake, that anybody can make a mistake. What Rav Ilish was embarrassed about is that now Rava's going to think that I'm unfit to paskin. Rava's going to think that all of my piske halacha were wrong, meaning any time I paskin halacha, not in his presence, perhaps I was wrong. So we'll say, so this is amazing. Meaning the fact that Rav Ilish made a mistake, that happens. Rav Ilish is embarrassed because now he thinks that Rava's going to think that all of my piske halacha are wrong. To which the Gemara says, so Rava realized that Rav Ilish was embarrassed. Kari Alei, he said ultimately again to Rav Ilish about this particular situation, Ani Hashem bi'ita achishana. I am Hashem. So we'll say he's quoting over here the pasuk ultimately from Yeshaya. Ani Hashem, I am HaKadosh Baruch Hu bi'ita achishana. In the right time, I will hasten redemption. Now we'll say, what does that mean? In the right time, I will hasten redemption. Look at the Rashbam. Kara alav, Rava l'nachamo. So Rava ultimately, again, wanted to console Rav Ilish. And he said, Ani Hashem b'ita achishena, be'ez shat tzadikim tzrichin li'yeshua, when the tzadikim require a salvation, HaKadosh Baruch Hu mamtzia lahem, afata, ani odeh b'cha, sheme olam lo basa din tzakala al yadecha, shari achshav zimemani li'ya HaKadosh Baruch Hu kodim shigata lo ra, So Rava tries to make Rav Ilish feel better. Just like HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when he needs to send redemption, does so. So the Ribono Shel Olam put me in the right place at the right time. To be here, Dafka, before you paskin in the wrong way, to prevent you from making a wrong psak. that I'm fully confident in general in your ability to paskin halacha in the right way. So we'll say, so this is amazing. So you have Rava totally taking it. So Rav Ilishfeld, that Rava is going to think I'm totally incompetent. Rava said just the opposite. I know you're competent, and amazingly enough, the Ribon Shel put me in the right place at the right time. Not to reverse your psak, but rather just the opposite. To what? To prevent you from paskining in the wrong way. But at the end of the day, the fact that he sent me a hair to prevent you from paskining the wrong way indicates that what? That Ribono Sholom, as well as I, have complete ability in your ability to ask. Your Rebbe said is such an incredible musar. You know, sometimes in life, when a person either makes a mistake or is about to make a dramatic mistake, so their confidence is shaken. The best thing you could do for a person in that moment is what? Is bolster their confidence. So Rava says to Rav Ilish, I have absolute confidence in your ability to be a proper Mora Hora. The Ribon Shalom sent me here, mamish, in the nick of time, before you paskind, to prevent you from doing something wrong, but I have absolute confidence in your ability to continue in your role as a Mora Hora, as a posek. Beautiful, beautiful Gemara. Posek says the Mishnah. Posek, now we come to a very interesting sugya. Hakosev es nechasav la'achirim v'niach es banav. Posek, let's say a person goes ahead and purposely disinherits his children. So posek, in this case over here, a person dafka writes his property to others and not to his children. Masha asa asui, what's done is then. Posek, now obviously, we've already begun to discuss this, but remember, in order to disinherit your children, you have to employ certain mechanisms. Because if a person just dies, right, then his property automatically transfers to his children. This is talking about where a person is employing some type of mechanism in order to ensure that there's some type of pre-death gift that would disperse his assets to others other than his children. So a person purposely disinherits his children. Masha asay asui, what's done is done. Ela ein ruach chachamim nocha emena. What says is very profound. But no, the chachamim are not happy with you. The chum are not happy with a parent who disinherits his children. Darko shel olam is when a parent dies, the property should go to the kids. So can you employ a mechanism through which your property will go to someone else? Yes, but just know it's not what Chazal wants. Rav Shimon Galil says, "Im lo hayu banav noagim kishura zachu latov." We'll say, and this is very profound. Rav Shimon Galil says, if your children are not behaving appropriately, in other words, if your children, I've also now the assumption over here is they are talking about on a spiritual level. If a person's children are not continuing in the Derech HaTorah, person's children are not what we call noagim kishura, not towing the straight line, then zachor latov. Then such a person who disinherits children like that, ultimately, again, is remembered for the good. So like, now obviously, with the Gemara, we're going to have to see, is Rav Shimon Galil disagreeing with Tanakama or not? That remains to be seen. I will say, but it appears that Rav Shimon Galil is saying that although under normal circumstances, a person should not disinherit his children, however, if those children are not continuing in the Derech Hashem, Zachor Latov, he's remembered for good. So says the Gemara, Ibay Lehu, Mi pligi rabbanan aleid Rav Shimon Galil olo. So say, here's the fundamental shayla. Is there a machlokas in the Mishnah? Because remember, how does the Mishnah start? The Mishnah begins by saying that although a person has the ability to disinherit his children, if he does so, ein ruach chachamim nochehemenu. The chachamim are not happy with such a person. Then Rav Shimon Galil comes along and says, but if your children are not noagim kishur. Now, by the way, we also have to define exactly what that means. If your children are not behaving in the proper way, but Pashas, it means they're not on the derech. They're not behaving in the proper way of Torah. Then it's good to disinherit your children. So the Gemara says the Shaila is, are the Rabbanan agreeing or disagreeing with Rav Shimon Galil? As we said, there are two ways to read the Mishnah. Either the Mishnah could read that the Chum are saying what? Chum are saying what? No matter what, you should never disinherit your children. No matter what, you should never disinherit them. Even if your children are not doing the right thing, you should never. And Rav Shimon Galil says, no, if your children aren't doing the right thing, you should disinherit them. Or is the Mishnah saying one unified halacha? The Chachamim are saying, under normal circumstances, a parent should not disinherit a child. The Chachamim are saying, that's only if the child is doing what's correct. But if the child again has left the straight and narrow path, then what? Then Lamaisa, parent, should disinherit them. So that's the Shaila. Is there a machlokis in the Mishnah? Or Rav Shimon and the Rabbanan agreeing with one another? So Tashma, suppose that Yimara tells Lamaisa. Tashma. Di Yosef ben Yoezer, Haya lo ben, Shalom Haya noe kishura. Say, listen to this. Yosef ben Yoezer had a son, Shalom Haya noe kishura, which literally means did not conduct himself in the proper way. Now, also remember, we know Yosef ben Yoezer. Who is Yosef ben Yoezer? He's quoted in the first parak of Pirkei Avos, right? The Mishnah Dalet, Mishnah Hey. Yosef ben Yoezer and Yosef ish Tzreda Kiblu Mehem. They remember they're the Talmidim of Antigonus, right? And ultimately, again, they're the ones who say Ye Beischa Baal Beischa Chachamim. Your home should be gathering. So Yosef ben Yoezer is one of the early Chachamim. So Yosef ben Yoezer had a son, Shelo Haya Noi Kishura, who did not continue Rabosei on the proper derech. Which Rabosei just tells you, by the way, you know, again, there are no guarantees with raising children. You could even be the Gadol Hadar, but there are absolutely no guarantees for who your children become. So Yosef ben Yoezer had a son, Shelo Haya Noi Kishura, who did not conduct himself in the appropriate way. So what happened? So Havilei Elise Didinore. So Yosef ben Yoezer had a gold, meaning as part of his estate, he had a bag filled with gold coins. So what did he do? Kam Akadsha. He was Makadish the coins. In other words, he did not want his son to inherit. So what did he do? He was Makadish the coins ultimately to the Beis HaMikdash. Azul Nosiv Bas Gadil Kalili Diyanai Malka. So the son, of Bosei, was not identified by name, but the son of Yosef ben Yoezer ultimately gets older, he grows up, and he marries the daughter of the person who used to weave the crowns for King Yanai. So apparently, again, he married into a Chasheva Mishpacha. He married a Chasheva woman. So what happens? Olidei Divisu. So his wife gave birth. Right, so Mazel Tov. So Yosef ben Yoezer's son gets married to this girl who has the daughter of the one who makes the crown for the king, for King Yanai, and his wife gives birth. Zaba le benisei. So his wife gives birth, and what did he do? He bought her a fish. As we'll say, it's an important idea of buying your wife a baby present. So mamish. So again, I would highly advise not trying this one, right? But again, he buys her a fish. Mazel tov, thank you. Right? He buys her a fish. So what happens? Kara, they open up the fish. The pashto start to cook it, to make it. Ashkach ba margalise. He found a beautiful precious stone in the fish. Supposed to listen to this. Amrale. So the wife said to her husband, Lo timtaye lemalka. Whatever you do, don't give this stone to the king. In other words, don't bring it. She was saying, essentially, don't bring it to my father. Right? Don't bring it to my father or for those who are in charge of the precious jewels for the king. Why? Deshakli le menach bedame kalili. Because they're going to force you to sell it for a cheap price. Rather, what should you do? Zil amtie legabe gizbore. Go bring it to the gizbar of the Beis HaMikdash. In other words, go bring it to the temple treasure. Now, Bosan, take a look at the Rashbam for just a moment. Legizbar, shal hagdish, v'ikachel ala avne ephod. So apparently, this stone was one of the stones which was usable for the breastplate of the Kohen Gadol. Now, the Rashbam makes an interesting observation. He says, "Zenehi debatli urim v'tumim." Even though at this point in time, historically, the urim v'tumim were no longer used, the shalbahen, to communicate, to converse with God, kidechsev, ad amot lekohen leurim v'tumim ke'adam shomer lechaveru ad sheva mashiach efod v'choshen mihu lo batli tein kohen gadol mishamish b'loshmon v'gadim. So what's happening? Rashbam just points out, even though by this point in time historically they were no longer able to communicate with HaKadosh Baruch Hu through the mechanism of the urim v'tumim, the choshen, the breastplate, was still worn by the kohen gadol. So the wife advises her husband, the son of Yosef ben Yoezer, go to the Beis HaMikdash. Go to the Beis HaMikdash and go ahead and what? And go ahead and sell the stone to them because they'll give you a better price. But look what she does. But she says, however, but you, my husband, do not recommend a price. Do not recommend a price. Why? Because why? What happens? Let's say when it comes to Hagdish, if you go ahead and you recommend the price, what's going to happen? You're going to be bound by that price. So you shouldn't say anything. Rather, what you should just do is go ahead and bring the stone and essentially say to the Gizbar, what? What? How much are you willing to offer me for this stone? So what happens? So the Gemara says, Ella l'shaimuhu inu. Rather, let the Gizbar evaluate and assess the stone, and he'll tell you how much he's willing to give. Amtie, so what happens? Sure enough, he brings the stone ultimately again to the Gizbar. Shamua betleisar ilasa didinari. Most listen to this. They evaluate, they appraise the stone, and they say it's worth 13 pouches of gold. Right, exquisite stone. 13 pouches of gold. Amarle, here's the problem, says the Gizbar. Amarle, Sheva Ika, Shisleka. All we have right now in the temple treasury are 7 bags of gold. So again, we're 6 short. We're 6 short. Some of us will say, what does the son of Yosef ben Yoezer say? No problem. Amarle, Sheva Havali, give me the 7 bags. Shis Hare Hein Mukdashos L'Shamayim. And I hereby give the other 6 as a donation. Right? Give the other 6 as a donation. So we'll say, amazing. Amdu v'kasu. So we'll say, here's what's interesting. Apparently, they used to go ahead and record all of the donations in a Beis HaMikdash ledger. Now here's what's amazing. Why would they record all of the donations? Take a look at the second wide line of the Rashbam. Amdu v'kasu. Mira be'inai she'kosun cheshbono shel hakdish. They used to write down in the ledger of the Beis HaMikdash how much money was brought in, how much money went out. Most of this is amazing. So they used to dafka record how gifts were given in the Beis HaMikdash. And most of they purposely recorded it. Why? Because there was a lot to be learned from how people gave and from how people took. So they recorded these ledgers that they should ultimately be available like as a form of mussar for later generations as well. So what did they write in the ledger of Osai? They wrote, Yosef ben Yoezer, hichnis achos. You know, Yosef ben Yoezer gave 1 pouch of gold to the Beis HaMikdash. Ubino hichnis sheish. And his son gave 6. Now Osai, now, by the fact that they're equating these 2 acts of giving, what are they saying? That the fact that, you know, remember, now why did Yosef ben Yoezer give that pouch of gold to the Beis HaMikdash? Why? Because he didn't want his son to inherit. Now, apparently what they're doing is, they're giving him a shkayach for that. They're saying, Yosef ben Yoezer, you know, you gave 1 pouch, your son gave 6, but they're equating his act of giving with his son's act of giving, which indicates to us that what Yosef ben Yoezer did was a good thing, which Rabbi Yosef shows you what? That when a person has a son who is off the derech, and a person chooses not to allow his son to disinherit his son, that Chazal apparently, again, are good with such a decision like that. Ikudan, Rabbi Yosef said, there's another version. The other version is, how do they record the gift? Yosef ben Yoezer, hichnis achos, Ubeno hotzi sheva. The other approach says that how do they go ahead and record this? They said Yosef ben Yoezer gave 1, and his son took 7. In this version, it's a little bit of a shtach to the son of Yosef ben Yoezer. Why? Because he should not have left the Beis HaMikdash coffers totally empty. So the same way they're giving a shtach to the son, they're giving a shtach to the father. And they're saying, right, like father, like son. The father did something inappropriate, and that's what? He disinherited his son, and the son did something inappropriate. Why? By leaving the temple coffers totally empty. So the Gemara says, going back to the first version, the fact that it says ultimately that it gives the son of Yosef and Yoezer a shkoyach, and it equates Yosef ben Yoezer's act of also giving to the temple coffers, Michlal the shaper of it. Sounds like Yosef ben Yoezer did the right thing by disinheriting his son. Says the Gemara, no, Adrabai, because it's just the opposite. Midika Amri Hotzi. The fact that it says that what? That Lamaisa. that the son of Yossi ben Yoezer took 7 pouches from the Beis HaMikdash, thereby leaving the Beis HaMikdash with nothing in its coffers, and it equated the act of Yossi ben Yoezer with that. Mechlad delav shapi ravid. It sounds like what? Yossi ben Yoezer did the wrong thing. Ella meha leka lemashmir mireh. Rather, I will say, what do you see from here? You see from here that you can't draw any inferences from this story. I will say, the only thing we do know from this story is that Yosef ben Yoezer disinherited his son. What we don't know is what? Was it the right thing or the wrong thing? We know that he did it. I will say, was it the right thing? Was it the wrong thing? We don't know. I will say, what is interesting is, we know that his son has given this incredible bracha, which is quite interesting. His son has given the incredible bracha. You know, everybody thinks it's just like the Chassidish Maisalach. You know, where the guy goes along, he goes fishing, he finds the fish, he opens it up. He finds the pearl. Ah, it's a beautiful Maisa. He's not a Chassidish Maisa. I mean, it is a Chassidish Maisa, but it's also a Gemaradika Maisa. So again, what you do with this is also very interesting. Meaning, obviously, you see a story like this. Obviously, person gets the fish, and they open up the fish, and they find a ridiculously priced, expensive jewel in it. That's obviously Ashkachas HaBorei as well. Was that to make up for the lost inheritance? Was that to make up for something else? Was it a baby present from Rosh Hashanah? Who knows? The point the Gemara is making is, at the end of the day, we can't really figure out from a halachic perspective what to do from this Maisa. The only thing we emerge from it is knowing that Yosef ben Yoezer had a son who left the fold. As a result, Yosef ben Yoezer disinherits his son. Was it the right thing or the wrong thing? That we don't know. But the Gemara goes, let's just do another few lines, then we'll stop. Tashma. I'm sorry. Samai Havyala. So we'll say, bottom line, what is the halacha? Meaning, is it appropriate for a parent to disinherit the son when the son has left Yiddishkeit or not? So Tashma. So listen to this. Here's what we do know. Shmuel said to Rabbi Yehuda, Shinina. Shinina means sharp one. Sharp one is a compliment. So Shmuel is talking to a prized disciple. Sharp one. Lo tehevi bay. You should not be present when avure achsanto. Never be present when a Yerusha is being transferred from a child who is the rightful heir. Take a look at the Rashbam. It's 2, 4, 6, 7 lines from the bottom. Be'abure achsanto, mokum shemavi ra'av nachala min ha'ro'ilo, va'filu laharbos la'echad ulama'id la'echad. So Shmuel said to Rav Yehuda, Shinin, a sharp one, it is never good to be present when Yerusha is being taken from a child who is the rightful owner and being given to another one. Va'filu mebrabisha lebratava. Even if it's being transferred from a bad son to a good son. The kol shekin mebra labarta. And all the more so from what? All the more so from a son to a daughter. So we'll say, what Shmuel seems to think of Yehuda is, we'll say, you know, sometimes, the world's supposed to work in a certain way. And the way the world is supposed to work is that when parents die, their childs inherit them. But what about the fact that the child's not good? So we'll say, you know, everything depends on the lens through which you see the world. If you see people as good, people are inherently good. That means that what? When someone does something bad, it means that there's something happening inside of them. If you believe that people are by default good, when people do something bad, that means there's something amiss, there's something churning, there's something wrong. So the goal is not to punish, the goal is to rehabilitate. So to go ahead and take the Yerusha from the child who is the rightful heir and give it to someone else, you're not addressing what the core issue is. The son's not doing the right thing. The son's going off the derech. The son's doing something bad. The way to deal with that is not to punish them by taking the Yerusha. The way to deal with that is to try to help them once again regain their footing in life. Therefore, says Shmuel, whenever you see a parent, now we'll have to see a Shmuel statement, halacha l'maaseh or not. Whatever it is, it's good that Shmuel is saying is, it's a bad thing to be. It's a bad thing to see. Don't be present when a parent is shifting Yerusha from an entitled child to an unentitled child, because that's reflective of a parent not understanding what the core issue is. My child's doing the wrong thing. I need to figure out how to love them more, how to embrace them more, how to hold them tighter, how to bring them closer, not how to punish, not how to level punitive measures. So let's just do it fine. You're twisting my arm. So we'll do one more line. Says in Tana Rabbanan. So what's the Gemara tells another Maisa? Tana Rabbanan. Maisa ba'adam echad shlo hayu banav noagim kishura. So what's the Gemara tells a story over here about a man. Actually, fine. About a man who I'll leave you off with a teaser. So the Gemara says there was a man whose son Shlohayibanam Nogim Kishura. So we'll say all of his sons. This man apparently had multiple sons, and none of his sons were behaving correctly. What happens? Amad v'kasav nechasav liyonasan ben Uziel. So I say, so what happens? So the man wrote all of his property to Yonasan ben Uziel. Right? The great Tanna, Yonasan ben Uziel. He goes ahead, he gives him everything. We're going to discuss more about Yonasan ben Uziel tomorrow. Ma'as Yonasan ben Uziel. So what did Yonasan ben Uziel do with the property? So machar shlish, he sold off a third. Hikdish shlish, he consecrated a third. Vehechzer shlish lebanov. And he gave back a third to the man's kids. So what happens? So Shammai came to Yonasan ben Uziel with his staff and his cloak. So what says Rashbam says, you know, when someone came at you with their staff and their cloak, that meant that what? They were ready to rumble. So Shammai comes charging at Yonasan ben Uziel with his staff and his cloak. Essentially saying to him, what was Shammai saying to Yonasan ben Uziel? What are you doing? Meaning, this man gave you his property. Why? Because he didn't want it to go to his kids. And you went back and gave a third of the property back to the kids. So what Shammai was accusing Yonasan ben Uziel was, is that you are in violation of mitzvah lekam divrei meis. There's a mitzvah to go ahead and fulfill the wishes of a person who has died. The man clearly gave you the property because he didn't want it going to his kids. Now you're giving it to his kids. So Yonasan ben Uziel retorts back to Shammai, Shammai, if you could reverse the one third that I consecrated and the one third that I sold, then you could reverse the one third I gave to the deceased man's kids. Top of Kuflam and Dalit. V'im lav, but if you cannot reverse what I consecrated and what I sold, iyata yochol lahoti mashech zarti. So Shammai essentially, close your mouth. Right? At the end of the day, the same way that you can't reverse that which I was maktish, and you can't reverse that which I sold, you also can't reverse the one third I gave to the kids. So the Gemara says, what does Shammai say? Hitiach alai ben Uziel, hitiach alai ben Uziel. I give up. Hitiach alai literally means, ben Uziel, the son of Uziel, has heaped upon me. In other words, I came to do battle, but I was defeated. At the end of the day, Ben Uziel, you are right. We'll stop over here. We're stopping mid-Maisa. We will in Meretz Hashem see tomorrow morning, and there's going to be beautiful Agarata tomorrow as well. We're going to see tomorrow morning why Shammai felt that he had a claim against the actions of Yonasan ben Uziel. Shkoyach.